24 hours of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. The White House chief of staff says there are no plans for President Ford to ask the special Watergate prosecutor about reports of an investigation into campaign finances when Mr. Ford was a congressman. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. White House Chief of Staff Richard Cheney talking with reporters aboard Air Force One, airborne Sunday night between Mobile, Alabama and Miami, said all of that material was reviewed previously. There's nothing new. And concluded Cheney, if there was, they'd say so. CBS News first reported Saturday that the investigation was being conducted into allegations that contributions to Mr. Ford's congressional campaigns from two maritime unions were laundered by GOP politicians in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and given to Mr. Ford for his personal use. Five of the six GOP officials questioned by the FBI told CBS News they had reported no such laundering took place, that no money was turned over to then-Congressman Ford. Mr. Ford is resting in Miami overnight before plunging into the final day of his three-day campaign sortie in the Deep South. Sunday featured a 153-mile motorcade along Mississippi's Gulf Coast, starting in New Orleans and winding up in Mobile, where Mr. Ford was greeted by Governor George Wallace, an avowed Carter supporter. A popular Alabama personality, football coach Bear Bryant, rode beside the president in a motorcade in Mobile and gave Mr. Ford his endorsement. Good news for the Ford campaign camp in the findings of the CBS News New York Times survey of post-debate reaction. Interviews of 1,167 people found 37% believed the president had won, while 24% gave the edge to Jimmy Carter. 35% rated it a draw. The survey found little impact from the now celebrated Carter Playboy magazine interview, which included some frank discussion of sex and sin. 93% of the respondents said they were unaffected by the interview. 25% said they were not even aware of the matter. Carter is in Portland, Oregon, having gone there Sunday evening after a second day of campaigning in Southern California. He focused on wooing votes among the Spanish-speaking, participating in a Chicano parade. And Carter got the endorsement of former San Francisco Mayor George Christopher, an alternate to the 1976 GOP National Convention. In Washington, D.C. on Sunday, an estimated 2,500 people, including representatives of more than 30 embassies, walked in a memorial procession, then attended a funeral mass for Orlando Letelier, former Chilean defense minister. He was killed last week when a bomb exploded in his car as he drove around Sheridan Circle at the head of Washington's so-called Embassy Row. Killed with Letelier, an official of the Institute for Policy Studies, was Mrs. Ronnie Carpen Moffett, a research associate at the Institute. Her husband, Michael, delivered a moving eulogy at the memorial services.
I'm finding it very difficult to get along without my wife. But I can take some measure of comfort in the fact that my wife died a hero. Her friend, Marcus Raskin, my own friend, said the other day that Ronnie specialized in doing little things without which big things can never happen. And for myself, I can confidently say that if the purpose of the junta and its henchmen were to silence the voice that speaks for free Chile and freedom-loving people everywhere, they have not silenced that voice. They have multiplied it a hundredfold.
The Chilean government expressed concern about the march and memorial in which Mrs. Hortensia Allende, widow of former Chilean President Salvador Allende, participated. Chile delivered a note to the State Department saying the memorial had all the characteristics of a mass political meeting. A prominent police official charges a federal agency with coercing police departments to establish quotas for hiring minorities. We get that story from Ike Siemens of CBS affiliate WTVJ in Miami.
Edward Davis, the incoming president of the International Association of Police Chiefs, accuses the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration of coercion in trying to force police departments to hire a certain quota of minorities. Davis, who is the Los Angeles police chief, says the LEAA is trying to do that with his department, and he believes it's illegal.
By law, they're not allowed to impose quotas, but in many places, they, in effect, have have coerced people to go along with quotas on the threat that they would take away the federal money. Now, we're in a position where we've told them that we are not going to go into quota hiring. In good faith, we're going to try to do a good job of balancing the makeup of our department out of the community, and we'll give them their money back, and we'll take them to court and do whatever we have to do to get away from this quota-type thing.
Chief Davis says that under no circumstances will he allow a quota system to be imposed by the LEAA on his department. Ike Siemens for CBS News, Miami Beach.
In Damascus, Syrian troops stormed a downtown hotel and killed the leader of a pro-Palestinian terrorist group holding 90 hostages. Four hostages died in the raid, and Damascus Radio reports that three captured terrorists were hanged in a Monday morning public ceremony outside the luxury hotel in Damascus. Mechanics for the Los Angeles Area Rapid Transit District have approved a contract providing increases of about 19% over 3 years. Transit District directors are to meet Monday to ratify the pact. It's predicted buses can be rolling again by Wednesday. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
This is KIXI Seattle. The time is 10:06 p.m.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Psychiatrists have sought the answers to puzzling facets of human behavior for years. Today, we speak freely of phobias, unexplained psychotic experiences. But in the year 1793, a humane, enlightened physician of the infamous mental institution at La Bicetre, a hellhole by any description, was brought to trial for daring to treat mental patients like human beings. He himself was called mad for, as the court put it, freeing the beasts from their chains. But as I said, times have changed. The story we're about to tell you about the horrors that took place in a similar institution is true. But it never really could have happened. Not here. Not yet. Not now.
Make them stop it, Doctor. That noise,
oh,
please.
It's just a summer night storm, Miss Agatha. You are safe here in the sanatorium.
Yes. Nothing here can harm me.
That's right. Now, go to sleep. I have to check on the other patients.
Yes, Doctor. There are others here who need watching. The dangerous ones. They hate me. They all hate me.
You must get some sleep. It's getting late.
Yes, you're right, Doctor. For the dangerous ones, it's getting later than you think.
Our mystery drama, Free the Beast, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ralph Goodman and stars Paul Hecht. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division.
I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The following is a test. Please answer all questions truthfully.
Question one. Which of these do you like most?
Rowboat, dentist, Opalie Suzu.
Question two. If you and three friends wanted to take a nice trip, would you take turns carrying each other, take turns throwing each other, or buy an Opalie Suzu?
Question three. Given a choice, would you attend a lecture on good posture, hurt your foot, or buy an Opalie Suzu?
If you answered Opalie Suzu to all three, see your Buick Opel dealer and take a test drive. Otherwise, see someone else.
Okay, Marion, hand me that paddle.
But, Teddy, those rabbits look so nasty.
Yeah, a bit rugged, all right.
But you've never even been in a canoe before, and I think
first time for everything, Marion.
But you like that.
Marion, I'm a grown man.
Teddy!
If you want a little excitement in your boating recreation, that's fine. But the American Red Cross urges you to protect yourself with knowledge, skill, and the proper safety equipment.
Whoa!
After all, why do it the hard way?
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. God appeared to Ezekiel in a vision. The heavens opened and Ezekiel beheld a whirlwind, a great cloud and a fire unfolding itself with winged creatures within wheels, wheels within wheels. God spoke and proclaimed Ezekiel a prophet and sent him to speak in his name to the people of Israel. God can come to man in dreams and visions and can speak to him in signs and wonders. For your free booklet on dreams and visions, write to the Foundation Faith, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Faith, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Elderly patients at the formidable isolated Greenbrier Sanitarium have been restless all day. And now that night is closing in and the intensity of the darkening clouds increase, the doctors and nurses double their rounds. The resident psychiatrist, Dr. Paul Thurman, has begun his nightly round of the third floor. Patients on this floor, although completely harmless, do need his personal attention. Most are alone in the world, deserted by friends and family. He pauses a moment outside one of the doors because he hears an unfamiliar voice.
Yes, I have watched them. Each night I have watched, listened.
A strange voice, one he cannot identify, seems to be coming from Miss Agatha's room. But that is not possible. Miss Agatha has been at Briarwood for almost a year and has spoken to no one.
Be calm, little sister. Nothing will harm you. I've always looked after you and I shall continue to look after you. As long as we both shall live.
Miss Agatha.
Yes, Doctor.
Oh. You're alone. I thought...
Yes, Doctor.
I could have sworn I heard...
Heard what?
Well, I thought... strange, there's no one here in the room with you, and yet...
Yet what, Doctor?
I distinctly heard a voice. Oh, not your voice, Miss Agatha, but an older voice. A woman 70 or 80.
You must be mistaken, Doctor.
She called you little sister.
I have no sister.
Yes, I know that.
But I do have a puzzle for you.
A puzzle?
Brothers and sisters, I have none. But that woman's mother is my mother's daughter. Who am I?
Miss Agatha...
No, stop. Make them stop, Doctor. That noise.
Oh, just a summer night storm, Miss Agatha. You're safe here.
Yes. Nothing here can harm me.
That's right. Now, lie back. Close your eyes and go to sleep. I must check on the other patients.
Yes, Doctor. They need watching. The dangerous ones. They hate me. They all hate me.
You must get some sleep. It's very late.
Yes. You're right, Doctor. It is very late. For the dangerous ones. It's later than you think.
But I tell you, I heard it, Margaret.
But it's hard to believe, Paul. A strange, disembodied voice coming from Miss Agatha's room? And you went into the room and saw nothing?
Nothing but Miss Agatha sitting up in bed. She was terrified of the storm, and the voice was calming her.
It's strange.
I know there was someone or something in there talking to her.
But it sounds so illogical. But there's only one door leading to each of those upstairs rooms. The windows are barred, and... Darling, are you sure?
Of the voice, yes. But where it vanished to, no.
Could she have been talking to herself?
Well, she never has. Besides, the voice was so different. The entire quality of that voice, it was so much older, raspier. I tell you, Margaret, something strange, something unexplainable took place on that third floor last night.
If I may say so, Doctor, considering you are an accredited psychiatrist, you're acting weird.
The word, darling, is weirdly. I'm not acting weirdly, just cautiously. There is one thing you can do, sweetheart.
What's that?
Let's start by pulling the file on Miss Agatha. See if she has any relatives she hasn't told us about.
Relatives? Miss Agatha? Oh, she doesn't have. I mean, I've gone over her file a number of times since she was admitted. She's an only child.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Hmm. That voice, the voice I heard in her room, it called her little sister.
Look, Paul, I know I shouldn't attempt any psychiatric explanations, but you know how lonesome Miss Agatha is, never making friends with the other patients here.
What are you getting at?
Well, it's a theory that's usually applied to children, but considering how far Miss Agatha has regressed, isn't it possible that she's invented a playmate, a protective playmate, an older sister?
That's a good try, but just you concentrate on being beautiful, huh? Let me concentrate on what I heard in that empty room last night.
You still insist there was someone in there?
Someone or something. I know that's, as you say, weird for an accredited psychiatrist to suggest. But go through Miss Agatha's file once more. And if she hasn't got an older sister, well, we'd better start looking for an 80-year-old patient in this institution who can walk through walls. This is a progress report dated the 28th. Patient, Miss Agatha Milford, age 37. Patient not adjusting to confinement. Resistance to group therapy aggravated by persecution complex. Oh, yeah, come in. Patient is convinced that members of group are hostile to her.
Sounds like you're reporting on Miss Agatha, right?
Right. I'll be with you in a minute, Margaret. Just let me complete this tape.
I brought her file. Everything I could find on her.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm with you right now.
I dug up everything I could find on her.
Good. I'll do my report again later after we check what you have.
But it's a waste of time, really.
Huh?
I don't have a thing. No brothers, no sisters. She has none.
Brothers and sisters, I have none. But that woman's mother is my mother's daughter.
What?
That's what Miss Agatha said last night. When I heard that strange voice in her room, I asked if she had a sister. She said no. And then she added, brothers and sisters, I have none. But that woman's mother is my mother's daughter.
Oh, I've heard that riddle before. But isn't it son? I mean, that man's father is my father's son?
Yeah, but not the way she says it.
What does it mean?
I don't know. Right now, I don't know anything for sure. I don't even know if I actually heard that voice coming from Miss Agatha's room.
But you said that...
Oh, I heard a voice, all right. It wasn't Miss Agatha. It sounded like it came from her room, but... could it have come from somewhere else?
Where? The rooms are 30 feet apart. If it came from the next room, Mrs. Havistrom's room...
No. It couldn't have come from Havistrom's room. I passed there. All was quiet. It came from the far end of the hall. I wonder...
What?
Oh, no, no. Never mind. Let's see that file.
Here you are.
Mm.
Oh, and talking about Mrs. Haverstraw.
Yeah?
Well, she and Miss Agatha got into another one of their brawls this morning.
Oh, no. What about?
Same thing. Miss Agatha still insists that the gold locket Haverstraw wears around her neck is hers. You know, the one with the picture of Haverstraw's father in it.
Yeah, what's this? What's this entry here? It's hardly legible. It's a,
mm-hmm.
Look, it's some sort of legal document. It seems to be rain damaged. Well, what is it?
Adoption papers.
Adoption papers?
Yeah. 1936 or 39, I can't quite make it out.
Mm.
An adoption agency in Greenville Township. That's just across the county line.
The name on the document is Milford.
Yeah.
That first name looks like it could be Agatha.
Yeah?
You know, I bet if we checked this out, we'd find it's Miss Agatha who was adopted.
But it's funny she never mentioned
it. Well, she may not know.
Mm-hmm.
Most adopted children are never told. Agency records are confidential. But I think we've come up with a lead.
A lead? When she doesn't know she's adopted and agency records are top secret, what kind of a lead is that?
That's a tough one, I'll admit. But with a little digging, we may find out more about our strange Miss Agatha. Now, what was that about the locket?
The usual. Miss Agatha insists that the locket is hers. And this time she tried to tear it off Mrs. Haverstraw's neck. And, well, Haverstraw swung her cane at her. But fortunately, she missed.
That Haverstraw locket?
It could be Agatha's, you know.
Well, I don't see how. Agatha Milford came here less than a year ago. I mean, look at her record. Well, here's what she brought with her. Just a few personal belongings. Items supplied by County Hospital. Oh, no jewelry.
I see.
Well, just keep Haverstraw and Miss Agatha separated, will you?
Yes, Doctor. And the voice in the night.
That I intend to check out further.
How?
From now on, I'm not making those spooky nightly rounds alone.
I don't blame you.
Starting tonight, you're going with me. Time to make the rounds. Someone covering for you down here?
Yes, one of the matrons.
All right, let's be off, shall we? Just a few more steps to the top. Oh, careful. Careful, the railing here is not too secure.
Railing? This entire third floor is ancient. If you ask me, we ought to close down the whole building. At least this crumbling railing should be replaced. Paul, if you'd only talk to the correction board, they might be... What's that?
I don't know. It's coming from the far end of the hall.
Miss Agatha's room?
Let's see, shall we? Yeah, those are the same sounds I heard last night.
Don't cry, little one. There's no need to cry. I'm here with you always.
That! The other voice, did you hear it?
I don't know, I heard the wind.
You are not alone, little sister. You need fear nothing or no one. Do not cry. I will never leave you.
Is it a voice or is it the wind? I can't quite understand the words.
Shh,
and yet...
shh. Listen.
There's nothing to fear, my little sister. No one will harm you. I've always looked after you. I will continue to look after you. Until death do us part.
It's a weird voice. It's certainly not Miss Agatha's.
Please, shh.
Tell me, little sister, why do you weep? Is it about the locket? Your locket? The one that's been taken from you?
Yes. Yes, the locket. That Haverstraw woman still has it. She tried to kill me. I wish she were dead.
She's talking to herself about that fight she had with Mrs. Haverstraw this morning.
Yeah.
Or is she talking to herself?
I want it, sister. I want it. That locket is mine. Mother gave it to me. You were there. You remember?
Yes, I remember, little sister, the locket is yours, and you shall have it. I promise. I promise.
Wait! Don't go!
I must, little sister, I must.
The voice. Listen, it's fading.
Quick, open the door.
I can't. It's locked.
The keys. Use the keys.
Sister, please. Come back.
Damn it, the keys. I don't have them. Miss Agatha. Miss Agatha, it's Dr. Thurman. Let me in.
No. No, doctor. Go away. I'm asleep. I must rest.
Please, Miss Agatha. Nurse Palmer is with me. I must talk to you. Please. Please let us in.
What have we here? A ghostly disembodied voice that makes nightly visits to one of the lonely inmates of Greenbrier Sanatorium? Has Miss Agatha invented an older sister to console her in her loneliness? Dr. Thurman seems convinced that the voice he hears is not that of Miss Agatha. But for the moment, he has chosen not to make a hasty decision, convinced that there is more to what is going on than meets the ears. We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act Two.
Do not fall. Do not fall.
Eating, it's one of the great pleasures in life. But a steady diet of the wrong kinds of food, the fatty ones we all seem to crave, can endanger your heart and increase your risk of heart attack. This is Van McCoy with a tip from the American Heart Association. A balanced diet, low in calories and saturated fat, can tip the scales in favor of your heart's health. Eat hearty with low-fat dairy products, lean meats, and crispy vegetables. Ask your Heart Association for more diet information. They're fighting for your life.
His opponent orally with his typical pre-fight chatter. Let's listen. It will not be a clean fight, ladies and gentlemen. Dirty Harry, the more aggressive of the two, mixes up his punches with a barrage of sulfides, hydrocarbons, and, of course, his big closer, carbon monoxide. Lungs, meanwhile, fights a more defensive battle in the hopes of simply outlasting his opponent. And now, as we await the bell, we pause for this message.
Dirty air is out to knock the breath out of you with asthma, bronchitis, emphysema, and lung cancer. Don't take it lying down. Join with your lung association in the fight against air pollution. It's a matter of life and breath.
Over 600 years ago, back in the 15th century, two scholarly monks compiled a book of horrors called Malleus Maleficarum, a definitive study of mental illness that proved conclusively that the poor tortured souls chained in the snake pits were not ill, but unwillingly possessed by demons and witches. Two cures were suggested by these enlightened scholars. Cleansing fire to be used against witches, and torture on the rack to discourage invading demons. It is recorded that both of these cures worked permanently, but that was yesterday. Morning has come to Briarwood. The strange voice that haunts the third floor still remains a mystery. Dr. Thurman is seated in his office, recording the case history of the frightened, uncommunicative Miss Agatha Milford.
The possibility of schizophrenia exists. Further testing is called for. Oh, yes, come in.
Hey, good morning, Doc. How's it going?
Oh, Connolly, I'm just taping more about that strange experience I've been telling you about. Hang on a minute. I'll shut off this tape recorder.
You know, that's a great way to keep records.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to buy one of those gadgets for the agency. How's our suspect, Miss Agatha, doing?
Oh, please, let's not refer to her as a suspect. She's a patient, one we know very little about. That's why I called you in. Did you have any luck tracing those adoption papers, or is the agency still in existence?
You know, you're lucky, Doc. That adoption agency is still in existence, and I was able to get a look at their files. I got it all right here.
I appreciate the effort you're putting into this.
Well, you're an old friend, Doc. For clients, we do the possible. For friends, the impossible.
Thanks, Connolly. Would you let me see the file?
Now, hold it. This is a favor, right, Doc? So why don't you let me read it to you? Feed you a clue at a time so as I can get more than just one pat on the back for being so clever.
Yeah, sounds like you hit the jackpot.
Yeah, I kind of. Now, to understand this complicated dossier, we'll have to start here on page 7 and work our way backwards.
Funnily.
Relax, will you, please? Let's see. First, we have the patient's transfer from Greenville to Briarwood, the newspaper clippings, then the murders.
Murders?
I'm coming to them. Here we are. Milford, Agatha, natural parents.
Natural?
Your hunch was right, Doc. She was adopted.
Then the name of the child on the adoption papers, the name we couldn't read?
Agatha Ann Milford.
Hmm.
Adopted daughter of Charles and Henrietta Milford. Her real mother was named Mason. Carrie Lee Mason. She worked as a lab technician at Mercy Hospital. That's where the child was born. A few months before the trial took place.
Trial?
Yeah. It seems Miss Agatha's mother was some sort of nurse's aide at the hospital, took care of terminally ill patients. And she was a very sympathetic woman. Unfortunately, too sympathetic.
What does that mean?
Well, according to these newspaper clippings I dug up at the library, dated September 1939, the supposedly kindly Mrs. Mason was accused, and later convicted, of the murder of 6 of her patients. She simply turned off the oxygen supply and let nature take its course, which, of course, was inevitable. Only the jury judged it to be murder in the first degree.
Oh, poor woman. Watching those patients suffer day after day, wasn't the pressure that she was under taken into consideration by the court?
Ah, but that's just the point. Evidence in the trial showed that she was under no pressure at all before, during, or after the murders. According to her testimony, she just, followed orders.
Orders?
She said a voice told her to do it. It's all here in this newspaper account. It seems our Mrs. Mason heard voices in the night. Voices that calmed her and comforted her in times of trouble. And voices that told her how to comfort others.
Good Lord. Like mother, like daughter.
What?
No, nothing. Go on. What else do you have there? This woman, Mrs. Mason, Miss Agatha's mother, did she have any other children?
Other children?
Yeah, sons, daughters. Particularly daughters. A girl, perhaps, older than Miss Agatha.
Oh, at least not according to the records I've dug up. Mrs. Mason had no other children. Miss Agatha was an only child.
Are you sure? It's important. Could there possibly be a sister, an older sister?
Oh, you mean that voice you've been hearing, huh? I'm sorry, Doc. There's no answer in that. When the Mason woman was sent up for the murders, her child was put up for adoption. Miss Agatha, that is. Her only child. Now, of course, there are skeletons in every closet if you want me to dig deeper.
Yeah, I wish you would.
Well, sure, old buddy, I will.
The easy way out is to classify Miss Agatha as a schizophrenic.
You mean that Miss Agatha and her sister may be the same person?
Yeah.
Only you don't really believe that.
No, not after the studies I've made so far. There are reasons too complicated to go into.
Yeah. Well, if I can be of any help...
Thanks, you have been. Oh, by the way, is there a picture of Miss Agatha's father in those clippings?
Yeah, I believe there is. Wait a minute. Yeah, here we are. Nice-looking guy.
Yeah.
Mustache, long sideburns, looks like Valentino, huh? Why?
Oh, we've had a little dispute over a gold locket. It belongs to Mrs. Haverstrom. Inside the locket is a picture of her father. Miss Agatha claims the locket is hers.
Well, here, take a picture. Oh. Compare it. That'll take care of one problem.
I hope so. I've had to lock Miss Agatha in her room. I had a padlock installed last night. At least I know she'll be safe until this petty bickering is over with, and we can try to trace that strange voice we've been hearing.
Well, if you hear two voices coming out of there now, you'll know it's just another case of schizophrenia.
Yeah, I hated to have to do it. Miss Agatha is not a violent person. She must have been terrified when Mrs. Haverstrom swung that cane at her.
Oh? Uh-huh. Sounds to me like you locked up the wrong patient.
Mrs. Haverstrom is not violent by nature. Look, it's too much to explain. If you'll let me have that photo, she'll prove once and for all who the owner of that locket is. Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Dr. Thurman speaking.
What?
When did it happen? Miss Agatha, where is she? I see. Yeah. I'll be right there. Well, we won't need that photo after all, Connolly. Mrs. Haverstrom is dead.
What? Dead?
The third floor railing. It's needed repairs for months. The poor crippled old woman must have leaned against it. She just fell to her death down three flights of stairs.
Hell. Look, could she have been pushed?
Look, I'm sorry. I can't discuss this any further. I gotta get to the infirmary.
Slow down, Paul. I can't keep up with you.
I'm sorry, Margaret. I'm anxious to check out Miss Agatha's room. I just don't understand how Mrs. Haverstrom got out of her room and over to that shaky railing alone. Where was the third floor matron, huh?
She was called away for a few moments.
I've told you never to leave the third floor unattended.
She was only gone for a short while. You heard me tell that to the police.
Yeah, they're taking the body away. When this gets out, Margaret, I just can't understand what happened. Come on, let's get to Miss Agatha's room.
All right, Doctor. I'm sure you'll find everything in order. Door locked since last night, as per your instructions. Padlock on, also locked.
I don't think so, Miss...
Connolly, what are you doing up here?
Just a little checking, Doc. What I found isn't too pleasant.
Who is this man?
I'm sorry, Margaret, this is Charles Connolly, detective.
Detective?
Private detective, a friend of mine. He's been checking into Miss Agatha's background for me.
Whatever for?
I wanted to find out more about her. I told him about the argument she had with Mrs. Haverstrom over that locket.
That Haverstrom woman didn't fall down that flight of stairs by accident.
What are you trying to say, Connolly?
The woman was dragged from her room and tossed through that rotted railing. She was murdered.
What?
Well, I didn't say anything in front of the police. I mean, they accepted it as an accident, but someone carried her to that railing and pushed her over. My guess would be Miss Agatha.
But that's impossible. She's been locked in her room since midnight.
Well, that remains to be seen. Where's her room?
At the end of the corridor. But even if she did get out, she couldn't lift a 200-pound arthritic patient like Mrs. Haverstrom.
The woman wasn't lifted. She was dragged along the floor. I found black heel marks leading to the edge of the stairs and the end of the broken railing.
Let's get to her room.
Okay, right with you, Doc.
How could Miss Agatha get out of her room? It was bolted from the outside, reinforced by a security lock. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm afraid there's just no other answer.
There's got to be another answer.
Huh?
Up ahead. Hey, you see that room at the far end of the hall?
Huh?
Well, that's Miss Agatha's room. And even from here, you can see that the padlock is still on and it's still intact.
Well, I'll be... Yeah, not a mark on it. It sure looks okay. It's solid, sturdy.
Who has the key?
I do. If you gentlemen will step aside,
Well, good morning, Doctor. It's such a beautiful morning, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is, Miss Agatha. You slept well, I trust?
Oh, very well, Doctor. I see you've brought some visitors. Nurse Palmer.
Good morning, Miss Agatha.
And a gentleman I don't believe I've met before.
This is Mr. Connolly, Charles Connolly, an old friend. He just stopped by to say hello, meet some of our new patients.
How nice. A pleasure to meet you, Mr. Connolly.
Well, thank you, Miss Agatha.
And may I say you've come to the right place.
I beg your pardon?
Well, I mean, it doesn't look like much from the outside, but it's so pleasant here. Everyone is so nice.
Oh, yeah, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Even Mrs. Haverstrom. She was trouble for a while, but everything is fine now. It's all been taken care of.
It has?
Yes. Doctor, I have a confession to make. That was my sister you heard me talking to in my room. I didn't want to admit it because of sanitarium rules. No visitors after 8 o'clock. But since she won't be coming back anymore, I can confess. admit that she's been here. Because everything is all right again.
What do you mean, everything is all right again?
Well, look, Doctor. Look what I have around my neck.
Good Lord. Mrs. Haverstrom's locket.
Despite evidence to the contrary, Dr. Thurman still insists that his initial psychological diagnosis of Miss Agatha was correct. Convinced that this frail, frightened woman could not possibly be involved in anything as horrible as murder, let's hope Paul Thurman is right. Because if he is not, he could be dead wrong. We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act Three.
Well, sir, I see you're one of the many people who bought a new Buick Century.
That's right. Boy, you want to talk about roomy and comfortable. Just take a look in there. Go ahead.
But you have curtains hanging in your car.
Yes, and wallpaper, too.
Well, why's that?
Well, we like the Century so much, we decided to sell a house and live in it.
Huh. Well, doesn't that get just a little crowded?
Oh, I suppose it might after a while, but, well, we aren't home that much.
Oh.
Yeah, we got a little Skyhawk up north.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Hi, I'm Don Rickles. I'm in the business of making people laugh. It's good to have people laugh. Make them feel happy. I'll tell you who also makes people feel happy. Your YMCA. The whole family can take advantage of the activities at your neighborhood Y. Of course, it's great for kids. Gym and swimming, for instance. The YMCA camps where kids can swim, ride, hike, and learn sports of all kinds. Outdoors in the clean air and sunshine. Support your YMCA. They're in the people business.
Recently, I came across a little-known organization that is really reaching out to help thousands of children and adults afflicted with serious visual impairments, such as glaucoma and macular degeneration, causing great physical and emotional difficulties. And with all the commercialism in the world today, I was struck by their sincerity and their humanity. I know that I don't do as much as I could or should for worthy causes, and so I offered to say a few words in their behalf. This is Arlene Francis, speaking for the National Association for the Visually Handicapped. This is nonprofit, founded by Mrs. Lorraine Markey, herself a mother of two visually handicapped children. If you know someone who needs their help with counseling, optical aids, large print books, and educational services, write to the NAVH, Box 700, New York, 10016. Funds are badly needed, and they would certainly be very much appreciated. Thank you so much.
The strange death of Mrs. Haverstrom at the Briarwood Mental Institution could, by those untrained in psychiatric research, be simply diagnosed as madness. Wasn't it Lewis Carroll's observation in Alice in Wonderland that went something like this? "How do you know I'm mad?" Alice remarked. "You must be," said the cat, "or you would not be here." A simple solution to our mystery, I must admit. But not for those of us who have been expertly trained in madness and murder. We need more time to contemplate, consider, to separate the half-lies from the truths. Listen.
And since the death of Mrs. Haverstrom, continued attempts made by staff members to remove the golden locket from Miss Agatha's throat have made the patient exceedingly hostile. She has become suspicious of all who enter her room and is now refusing food unless served by the one staff member she trusts, Nurse Palmer. Oh, yes, come in. All attempts to gain access to Gold Locket have failed.
Until this morning, Paul. Look, the locket.
Yes. How did you get it?
She held it a little too tightly this morning. The clasp broke, and I told her I'd have it repaired and bring it right back.
Huh. As simple as that?
Where is the picture of the father that Mr. Conley gave you? I want to compare it with the one Mrs. Haverstrom showed me. I've been trying to open that clasp, but it seems to be jammed.
Oh, here, give it to me. Let me do that. You'll find the newspaper clipping in that desk drawer, the one on the left.
I'll get the picture.
Okay.
You work on that clasp. Were these the clippings?
Yeah. This clasp seems to be bent. I'll get it in a minute. Do you remember what the man in the locket looked like? Was he young, old?
Young man, about 30.
Well, that sounds about right. Man in the newspaper clipping was about 30.
Sort of plain-looking, slightly balding.
Plain-looking? Baldy?
What's wrong?
A mustache or long sideburns?
No. Mrs. Haverstrom's father was clean-shaven, heavy features. It was a tintype. I guess it must have been taken in the early 20s.
Well, it's not the same man.
It's not?
No. Here, give me the clippings. I'll show you. See, there. There. That's Miss Agatha's father. There, young, dashing, handsome. Looks a lot like Valentino, huh?
Oh, I'll be darned. All this trouble for nothing.
Yeah. I finally got this locket open. There, you see. Oh, no.
What's the matter? Paul, what is it?
The photo in the locket. It's neither the man you described nor the man in the clipping. It's a photo of a woman. An old woman in her 80s who looks exactly like Miss Agatha.
And so I rushed right over to your office, Mr. Conley. I brought the locket with me. And inside you'll find the picture of that strange woman that we found when we opened it.
Could I see that locket, Miss Palmer?
All right, but I have to bring it right back. Miss Agatha found out I showed it to Dr. Thurman. She's very upset. She says she told her night visitor, you know, the avenging sister, about Dr. Thurman refusing to return her locket.
Which means he's next on her list. Or somebody's list. Can I look at that locket, please?
Oh, yes, of course. Here.
Thank you.
The clasp is still jammed, so I left it open, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the photo that we found inside the locket. It looks exactly like Miss Agatha, only 30 years older.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And you have no idea how this photo got in here, hmm?
No. I mean, we still have no idea how Miss Agatha got the locket in the first place. The last time I saw it, Mrs. Haverstrom was wearing it.
Yeah, I know.
And when Mrs. Haverstrom fell through the railing to her death down that flight of stairs, Miss Agatha was locked in her room.
How many keys are there to that padlock?
You still insist Miss Agatha had something to do with Mrs. Haverstrom's death. But in order to do that, she'd have had to have help from the outside. An accomplice at the sanitarium.
How many keys, Miss Palmer?
Two. Mine and Dr. Thurman's. Oh. Since Dr. Thurman is an old friend of yours, I suppose that puts me in the category of being a prime suspect.
No, I didn't say that. You did.
But you didn't say I'm not. If anyone had the opportunity to assist Miss Agatha in this, what you call, madness, I did.
Yeah, Miss Palmer, I've thought of that. I mean, you turned the third floor over to a matron that night, right? Then sent her on some sort of errand.
What do you mean, some sort of errand? We have a diabetic patient under our care, Mr. Conley. I sent the matron to give that patient an insulin shot.
Was the patient on the third floor?
No. No, she's in Ward 1 on the main floor.
Then that would leave the third floor unsupervised, huh? And it would give you time enough to accomplish whatever you wished. Unobserved.
I resent this.
Time enough maybe to smother Mrs. Haverstrom with a pillow, drag her to the top of the stairs and toss her to her death through the rotted railing?
Is that an accusation?
No, Miss Palmer. It's just a theory.
All right. And how do you explain the locket that we found around Miss Agatha's neck?
Well, you have a key to her room. You could have slipped in, placed the locket around her neck while she slept.
And the photo, Mr. Conley? I assume you have an answer on that, too. Where would I have gotten a photo of an old woman who looks exactly like Miss Agatha?
From one of the newspaper clippings I left with Dr. Thurman. The Carrie Lee Mason file. A duplicate of the one I keep here in my desk drawer. Would you like to see the clipping, Miss Palmer? A recent clipping?
Mr. Conley, I've been patient until
here
now.
Here is what Carrie Lee Mason looks like today.
The same. The same photo. It's exactly... exactly the same as the one in the locker.
Oh, not quite, Miss Palmer. You see, the prison guards have been cut away to make the photo fit in the locket frame. Easily enough done with, a pair of surgical scissors.
I've had enough.
I haven't. Now, I've checked out the sister theory Paul Thurman keeps insisting on, and so far I've come up with nothing. My partner Ross is out on it right now.
You've had less than 48 hours.
He's going to come up with nothing, Miss Palmer. The prisoner's in Greenville. He's there now checking their records, and it's a waste of time.
If you don't find any record of an older sister, then there has to be some other answer. Because I'm not it.
Oh?
You forget. The night Dr. Thurman heard that strange voice coming from Miss Agatha's room, that second night, when I went with him to check it out, I was standing right alongside him, outside the room.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, if you can explain how it's possible for a person to be in two places at the same time.
Oh, that's very simple, Miss Palmer. The voice Dr. Thurman heard could have been on tape.
Tape?
Yeah. You do make it a practice to record patient histories on tape, do you not, Miss Palmer? I heard Dr. Thurman making such a recording when I stopped by his office. Who transcribes those recordings, Miss Palmer?
I do.
Excuse me. I won't be a minute. Hello? Connolly? Oh, it's you, Ross. What? What new development on the Mason file? You just found out what? Yeah, I'll meet you at the sanitarium. And then notify the police. Nurse Palmer will be with me. We're leaving right now. Bye.
What was all that about?
There's no time to explain now. How fast is that car of yours?
It's not mine. It's Dr. Thurman's. It's a sports car. It can do 100 if you open it up.
Well, baby, we're going to open it up. We got to get back to that sanitarium, and let's hope we make it in time.
Mr. Conley, please slow down.
Just hang on, baby.
Hang on. Hanging on for dear life. If anything happens to this car, I'll never hear the end of it from Dr. Thurman.
I'm not worried about the car, Miss Palmer. I'm worried about Paul Thurman.
Dr. Thurman, why? Look, you never told me what...
There's a turn up ahead. Hang on.
I was saying, you never told me what your partner Ross told you.
Well, you'll know in a few minutes. I only hope Ross got to the police with the information he gave me over the phone. We're going to need a patrol car to back us up.
We've got one following us. And at this speed, we'll probably pick up three more.
Good. All right, there's the driveway to the sanitarium. Right up ahead.
It's blocked by two police cars.
Hang on, I'm going to stop.
What's going on up there?
Look farther up beyond the service road.
Fire engine? Oh, look at the smoke. Oh, my God. Briarwood's on fire.
Come on.
That building is a death trap. I've got to help the patients.
Wait. Your patients are all right. They've all been evacuated. Look, over there in the clearing, the matron's got them out.
Oh, thank God. I don't see Paul. Dr. Thurman.
He's probably still in there. That's why Ross called.
Oh, I'm so confused. I don't know.
Ross was calling from the prison. Mrs. Mason wasn't there. She'd been showing signs of violent behavior and was transferred to a hospital for psychiatric testing. Now, that was a few days ago, just before you started hearing that strange voice coming from Miss Agatha's room.
You don't think
that... It's the only answer to all this. Madness. Security at the hospital is not like security at the prison. Ross checked. They've been looking for her since Friday. I think she's here.
Here? But how would she find out?
But somehow she did. Just look at the pattern, Miss Palmer. Patients warned, evacuated in time, everyone out, safe, but Paul Thurman. Now, remember, Mrs. Mason considered herself a humanitarian. I believe she set that blaze to destroy Briarwood and the man who kept her daughter prisoner there.
Hey. God,
he's right, Margaret.
Paul!
I saw her. I saw the face in the locket. She burst into my office, smashed everything she could get her hands on. Within moments, everything was ablaze.
Oh, Paul, are you all right?
Yeah. I managed to get out somehow after I released Miss Agatha from her locked room. But that poor, crazed woman is still in there. Last time I saw her, she was clawing her way up the blazing staircase, calling out, "Where are you, little sister? Don't be afraid. Mother is here."
The place is an inferno. We've got to get her out of there.
It's too late. The walls are starting to go. Boy,
She's still in there. She's a goner.
Could escape such devastation.
At least the others are safe.
Are you sure they all got out?
Yeah. Everyone but Mrs. Mason.
I don't understand. What made her do it? You know about these things, Paul. What brought that woman here? What drove her to such total destruction?
She couldn't help herself, Margaret. Intellectually, she may not have known whether Miss Agatha was her daughter or her sister. But emotionally, instinctively, she knew. She was driven by one of the strongest forces in nature. Love, Margaret. Mother's love.
According to the police report, only one charred body was found in the ruins of what was once Briarwood Sanatorium. It was found half buried at the foot of the stairs. Police reports do not give details, but they say, clutched in one blackened skeleton hand, someone found a key to a padlock. I'll return shortly.
Hi, this is Dick Clark. You know, I've been working with young people for a long time. For 30 years, CARE has been working with them too, but in a different way. You know, today more than half the people on Earth suffer life-destroying poverty. Millions of children go to sleep hungry. In Asia, Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East, families lack food, drinkable water, medical aid, even shelter. These people desperately need help, and CARE can provide that help. With your contributions to CARE, backed by needy people's willingness to work, here's what happens. Families are fed as men build roads, safer water systems, small clinics, feeding centers, and schools. Women work in the fields growing food. Through CARE, children at least have a chance to live and grow. There are millions of people all over the world who still need the means to help themselves. This is Dick Clark, asking you to help.
Send your check or money order to CARE, Box 576, New York, 10016.
What is sanity? I'm sure many of us often wonder who is sane and who is not. There are many definitions of a patient in need of psychiatric care. The one I liked the best was suggested rather sardonically, I thought, by the noted psychiatrist Dr. Carl Menninger. A patient, says Dr. Menninger, is merely a word which confines and controls the experience of madness before the individual has had a chance to tell his story. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Marion Seldes, Joan Lovejoy, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Hello?
Mr. Flaxman Lowe?
Yes, the same.
This is George Blackburton. You know, we've seen each other casually at the club.
Oh, yes, of course, Sir George.
I feel like the devil bothering you like this, but you were pointed out to me as someone who, well, was more or less an expert in the occult and supernatural.
Well, I have made a good deal of investigation, yes, but...
I'm in desperate need of help. Could you come right down to my place in Surrey? We have something that even my wife can't cope with.
Something?
Perhaps it's an old curse. I don't know, but there is a thing that is trying to crowd us out of the house that you can actually taste and smell. Disgusting and terrifying. I need help.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
brightened, beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Swift punishment has been meted out in Syria. Public hanging for three terrorists captured when government troops stormed a downtown hotel Sunday. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The terrorists were holding 90 hostages when the troops attacked the hotel. Four hostages were killed in the fighting, as was the leader of the terrorist group. 34 other hostages, including four Americans, were wounded. Radio Damascus announced the remaining three terrorists admitted they were affiliated with al-Fatah, the strongest group within the Palestine Liberation Organization. But al-Fatah denied the men were members of that group, as did other Palestinian elements. They labeled it a Syrian attempt to discredit PLO leader Yasser Arafat. Radio Damascus quoted President Hafez al-Assad as saying, "There could be no life to our citizens without security," as he approved a verdict of death by hanging for the captured terrorists. They were hanged Monday morning in a public ceremony outside the luxury hotel they had taken over. Lebanon's new president, Ilyas Sarkis, thwarted thus far in his efforts to find a peace formula for his civil war-torn country, is expected now to concentrate on formation of a new government. Sarkis met Sunday with leftist leader Kamal Jumblatt, but informed sources said the two-hour meeting brought no concrete results. Jumblatt left for Egypt and France. He's expected to meet with Sarkis again when he gets back in about a week. Meanwhile, the fighting continues. Parts of Beirut were hit by mortar shells last night, and the Voice of Palestine radio reported sniping and shelling all along the confrontation line dividing the city. President Ford is overnighting in Miami and will focus his campaign attention on Florida on Monday. Mr. Ford flew in late Sunday night after a busy day on the stump, featured by a 153-mile motorcade which took him from New Orleans to Mobile, Alabama, with five speeches in the course of that trip. In Mobile last night, the president focused on the theme of curing unemployment and inflation.
We've restored faith and trust in the White House. We have turned the economy around from inflation of over 12% to under 6%. We've added 4 million jobs from the depths of the recession in the last 17 months. Meaningful jobs with a chance for advancement. And we're going to do better. And I won't be satisfied as your president until we get a job for everybody who wants to work and will look for work.
In Southern California, the Democratic candidate was telling all who would listen that the Ford administration had engaged in mismanagement. More from CBS News correspondent Sharon Lovejoy.
Jimmy Carter spent much of his time in California campaigning in Mexican-American communities, where his support is strong in spite of his stand on abortion. Sunday, Carter was the main attraction at the annual Mexican Independence Day parade in Santa Ana. He walked through the streets of Santa Ana, accompanied by Governor Jerry Brown and Senator John Tunney. Both men have been actively campaigning for Carter in the past few weeks. In a short speech to the several thousand supporters at the parade, Carter urged everyone to register to vote in November. That has been a constant theme during the California campaign. Carter is aware of the large number of people who have indicated they will not vote in the presidential election this fall. He tells almost every crowd that this will be a close election, one where every vote will count. It is to Carter's advantage to have large numbers of minority voters registered here. While in Los Angeles, he received the endorsement of a group of black ministers, as well as prominent Chicano leaders, led by the head of the United Farm Workers, Cesar Chavez. Carter plans even more campaigning in California after his second debate with President Ford October 6th in San Francisco. Sharon Lovejoy, CBS News, with the Carter campaign.
Japan's ruling Liberal Democratic Party has been assured of a continued majority in the upper house of parliament, despite the stain of the Lockheed payoff scandal that some thought might see the party lose its political grip. Prime Minister Takeo Miki's party won two seats in special elections and will control 127 seats in the 252-seat upper house. More news in a moment.
Do you know how many double plays were made by Joe Tinker and Johnny Evers in the 4 years they played baseball together? Well, we won't leave this one to chance. It was 54. Plenty more baseball action is coming your way starting October 9th, when CBS Radio Sports brings you radio coverage of the National and American League championships, afternoons and evenings. And remember, you'll hear the entire World Series here, too, brought to you by CBS Radio Sports over many of these CBS Radio network stations.
Hi, I'm Don Rickles. I'm in the business of making people laugh. It's good to have people laugh. Make them feel happy. I'll tell you who also makes people feel happy. Your YMCA. The whole family can take advantage of the activities at your neighborhood Y. Of course, it's great for kids. Gym and swimming, for instance. The YMCA camps where kids can swim, ride, hike, and learn sports of all kinds. Outdoors in the clean air and sunshine. Support your YMCA. They're in the people business.
A management consultant warns physicians that practicing without costly medical malpractice insurance is risking complete financial ruin. The American Medical Association's weekly newspaper, American Medical News, recently found many doctors thinking of dropping such insurance coverage, while a number had already done so. Management consultant W. Fred Mangan says to be judgment-proof, one must give away all assets completely and irrevocably. Some physicians have considered putting all their property in their wives' names, but Mangan notes the U.S. divorce rate is 43%, and says chances of losing everything through divorce are much greater than the risk of an adverse malpractice judgment. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
This is KIXI Seattle, where the time is 6 minutes past 11.